Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
I'm Neil Stavem. Welcome to Connecting Faith. We've got a great show for you today. Thanks for tuning in. Honored to be able to spend some time talking with Rich and Renee Stearns. Rich Stearns, president of World Vision U.S. Rich was formerly the CEO of Parker Brothers Games, as well as Lennox Incorporated, and he and his wife Renee have five children of their own and millions more around the world. Renee Stearns is a former attorney, mother of five, grandmother of one, and active in church ministries, leading Bible studies and speaking and passionate about helping others broaden their worldview, seeing the needs and has the opportunity to travel with her husband. Rich has written several books. We've talked to him before about The Hole in Our Gospel and Unfinished. But they've written a new one together, came out here a few months ago, called He Walks Among Us, Encounters with Christ in a Broken World. And it's not only a beautiful book in the pictures, but it's a powerful, life-changing book in the stories. Rich and Renee, welcome to Faith Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you, Neil.
Maybe just by way of introduction, we should say a bit about this, just sort of the layout of the book, because it almost feels to me like this could be used as a daily devotional.
Well, that was the idea. You know, we organized the book into 90 stories about 90 of the people we've met around the world, and every story is about the same length, and it includes a scripture verse and a spiritual lesson. And we try to make it devotional in format so that people could do that. They could take maybe 3 months and just do one a day for 3 months and really take a journey with us around the world.
We like the idea of a series of devotional essays because we think that the stories we have to tell are ones you really need to sit with. You need to meditate on them as we consider what it is that God has called us to do to respond to the people around the world who he loves. So this format seemed to be helpful to do that, give us time to look at each of the people and really get to know them.
By reading these stories, I believe that there will be some change taking place, certainly our attitude and perspective. But I'm wondering about maybe both of you, if you could share a little bit about your story, because, you know, Rich, you came out of the business world, and I'm sure, Renee, you had all the nice dinner plates that you could ever need. Talk a little bit about maybe your faith journey and even coming to World Vision, and if that happened at sort of the same pace as God was working in your lives.
Well, maybe I'll start because my story will introduce Renee, but my faith journey is pretty remarkable. I did not grow up in a Christian home. I found myself in an Ivy League school as a young man and an atheist in my profession of belief. And my senior year at Cornell University, I was fixed up on a blind date with a 19-year-old girl named Renee. And I say girl because she was just about a girl then, and I was kind of a boy at the time. And on our first date, she shared the four spiritual laws with me, which comes out of Campus Crusade, and really talked about her faith and asked me if I had considered making a commitment to Christ. And, of course, on the spot, I didn't do it on the spot. I was kind of amused, but I listened to her, and over the next months, we started seeing each other more often, and we kind of fell in love. And to make a very long story short, she finally broke up with me because she said, I can't continue to date someone who doesn't share my faith, and I shouldn't have even let it go this far. So that decision by her really sent me on kind of a spiritual odyssey to try to discover who was this Jesus Christ that I had lost the woman I love over. And 50 or 60 books later, I read everything I could get my hands on, from C.S. Lewis to John Stott to, you know, books about archaeology and comparative religion and philosophy. I found myself at another Ivy League school, the Wharton Business School, falling to my knees and committing my life to Christ. But it wouldn't have happened had it not been for Renee. And it was interesting. Also, on that first date, I asked her what she hoped to do when she grew up, and she said, I have known all my life that I want to help the poor, and I want to get a law degree, and I want to, you know, use that to help the poor. And of course, helping the poor was the last thing on my mind as an atheist in college. And so here we are almost 40 years after that date, and we're both helping the poor through World Vision. So her kind of dream came true, but in a little bit different way than she had imagined. So, honey, do you want to correct any of my mistakes on that?
Oh, I think you're very gracious in remembering. You know, indeed, that is certainly the story of how we met. I, like Rich, grew up in a home where I didn't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, but we were church attenders, and at a point in my high school, maybe my senior year of high school, a very kind person introduced me to this concept of a personal relationship with Jesus. And for me, that made all the pieces fit. Everything I had heard about in church but hadn't quite understand how to put together made sense when this person said that, you know, what Christianity is all about isn't merely a religion, but a relationship with Jesus. And so, having gone off to an Ivy League school, I got involved with Campus Crusade. And as Rich said, he happened to be one of those people with whom I shared the four spiritual laws. But God is continuing to be gracious to us. You know, as we got married and began to grow in our faith, he very graciously exposed us to people whose worldview was much bigger than ours. And it was sometime into our marriage before Rich heard the call to go to World Vision. And that was an opportunity to kind of put everything together that we had been thinking about over our married life, about who we are and what God has called us to do. We hadn't been ready to serve him in the way that we can now at that time, but as we matured in our faith and in our life experiences, God has brought us to the place that we are now. I think sometimes I liken our spiritual journey to that of the wise men who, when they saw the star, went in search of a king. And when they arrived at Herod's palace, they thought this must be the place. But of course, the truth was it wasn't to the palace, but to the stable that God was leading them. We had thought for many years that we were just where God had us. We were serving in our church and in a variety of ways in different ministries, but those, it turned out, were really only part of the preparation that God was doing in our own hearts to make us ready to come to World Vision.
Early on in the book, you talk, one of the chapters is called Loosely Held, where you sort of address that question, how could Rich walk away from his corporate career, and maybe just say a word about, you know, what God has been teaching you even since that time about how we should hold loosely the things of this world.
Well, you know, Neil, I'll jump in on this one. When I was offered the World Vision job, you have to understand I was the CEO of a large company. I was making a lot of money. I was driving a Jaguar XK8 as my company car. We lived in a 10-bedroom mansion on 5 acres. We were living the American dream. And for a couple of kids that had grown up poor, I came from a broken home, alcoholism, bankruptcy, foreclosure. Renee came from kind of a blue-collar military family, never had much. And for me to make it to CEO and have, you know, all of the prestige and all of the trappings and perks of a CEO, and then to get this call, sell everything you have and give it to the poor and come and follow me, metaphorically, is what I think Jesus was telling us. I have to say it wasn't easy to do. I'd gotten very comfortable in that lifestyle and in who other people knew me to be. And so it took a great deal of faith and a wife that was right with me to finally have the courage to resign from Lennox and to, you know, leave all that behind and give my Jaguar back and put our beautiful house on the market and come out to World Vision for obviously a lot less pay. And it really was the Lord saying to me exactly what, you know, you mentioned, what Renee wrote in that devotional, Loosely Held, is I had some things firmly in my grasp. I had the CEO job. I had the prestige. We had the dream house. We had the perfect American dream lifestyle. And what the Lord was saying is if you would let those things go, I could put something in your hands far more precious than that. but you're going to have to trust me on this. And he was right, because the last 15 years have been the most remarkable of our lives. We have seen the world, traveled the world, flown 2 million miles together. We have had experiences a billionaire can't buy. And most of all, we've been able to be useful to God and to be able to serve his purposes instead of our own.
And there's a phrase in a poem that I'm familiar with that says that God can't pour his riches into hands that are already full. And I think that's what we were experiencing. We had full hands. The essay that you talk about, Loosely Held, is about a little boy who has a, quote, soccer ball made of scraps of plastic bags and a little bit of twine. And he and his buddies are playing a soccer game with this ball that they've made. And we came to visit them and offered them a brand new soccer ball, an American soccer ball, shiny, bright, with a little swoosh on it. And they were reluctant to let go of what they had, even though what we had to offer would be far better, because in their minds, they couldn't imagine anything more significant than this ball that they had worked so hard to make. And sometimes we're like that, too. We hold on to what's really subpar, imitation, because we can't imagine the riches that God has in store for us.
Talking today with Rich and Renee Stearns. Rich is the president of World Vision U.S., and Rich and Renee have together written a wonderful book, really a devotional book, a powerful, life-changing book called He Walks Among Us, Encounters with Christ in a Broken World. And in a moment, we're going to talk more with them and talk a little bit about, what do we have to offer the poor? You're listening to Connecting Faith.
Micah 6:8 calls us to act justly and to love mercy, but showing those biblical virtues can leave us exhausted and even depressed. On Thursday's Faith Radio Mornings, we'll hear from author Terry Powell. He'll give us some encouragement for standing tall for the Lord with his book called Serving Strong.
At 7:40, we'll learn how it's actually okay to question our faith. Yes, you heard us right. Author Angie Smith will share how challenging our own faith can lead us to a deeper relationship with Christ. Her book is Chasing God.
Thursday's Faith Radio Morning starts at 6 a.m.
Ready to get back on track with your resolutions and goals? We want to help as you commit to live fit.
Hey friends, this is Susie Larson, and I'm excited to announce the launch of our 40-day challenge, Commit to Live Fit. Each week, we deliver an email to your inbox with tips and encouragement to help build a stronger you, both physically and spiritually, as we head into the Easter season. It's not too late to sign up and join our six-week journey of faith and fitness. Head over to myfaithradio.com to sign up today.
We've connected today with Rich and Renee Stearns. Rich is the president of World Vision U.S., and he and his wife Renee have traveled over, 2 million miles at least. They have 5 children of their own and millions around the world. And Rich, of course, has written several books, including The Hole in Our Gospel and Unfinished, and this is one they've written together with some amazing pictures, just of stories of some of their encounters with children and men and women around the world. He Walks Among Us. And in that early on, there's a quote there I just want you to react to. But there's a misunderstanding we often have about the poor, believing that we who have so much are the ones in a position to offer help to those who have so little. But what we've discovered on so many of our trips is that we were the ones who were poor and they were the ones who were rich. Talk a little bit about our Americanized, wealthy Western perspective.
I'll let Renee jump in on that one first.
That's the thing that always surprises people, that it's not, when we come home to talk about the people that we've met, it's not what we've done for them so much when we go to observe the work that World Vision is doing in area development projects in over 100 countries around the world. It's the things that we have learned by being introduced to these families. Remarkably, people even who live at a very meager existence invite us into their homes. They feed us a meal, and they share their lives and their families with us. And one of the things that always strikes me is, again, you mentioned how, we have so much, And these people, in many cases, have so little. But I love the thought that God can truly never be all you need until God is all you have. And these people live in a way that, although they have their resources are very meager, oftentimes their understanding of who God is and their ability to depend fully on Him is so much greater than I experience in my own life, and I suspect my neighbors as well. And so that just strikes me that because I have so many kind of props to hold me up, I don't have to put my weight down on God in the way that some of these people do. And it certainly causes me to draw up short when I realize all of the things in my life that I use, that I depend on daily, that are not God. And when I see the way that these people live their lives, I am truly convicted of that.
Yeah, it makes me think of a story from the book about a woman named Fanadia, who I met in Zambia a few years ago. Fanadia was a great-grandmother, and she was living alone, virtually homeless, with a 7-year-old great-granddaughter. And when I started to discover why she, this old woman, was living with her great-granddaughter with no one else around, I learned that all of her children and their spouses and all of their children and their spouses had died of AIDS. So the only surviving members of her family were herself and 7-year-old Maggie. And yet this woman, who had nothing and had lost her entire family, had no sense of entitlement, no sense of anger about her situation. She just kind of accepted her lot. And it made me think of the verse that we hear from Paul. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. And this courageous great-grandmother was just doing what she knew how to do. There was a little girl that needed her, and she didn't have time for emotional angst, and didn't have time to complain, and didn't have really anything except, a reliance on God and faith that maybe she could provide for little Maggie what she needed. And in Fanadia's case, I came back 4 years later, and World Vision had been working in her community, so she had a better home to live in. Maggie was going to a private school in the community and was 12 years old and getting a great education. And she was just at peace because she had kind of a mud brick home with two chairs in it and a bed to sleep in, and she thought she was as wealthy as Bill Gates with all that she had.
And one of the things that we often see as well is, in spite of fairly meager circumstances, these people have hopes and dreams for the future for their children that are really quite remarkable. I know that I was in Niger in a triage tent that was being run by Doctors Without Borders, where the sickest children in this famine that I was there to see were staying. And I visited a mom and her little boy. He had tubes coming out of his nose, and a nurse was trying to find a vein into which she could run an IV, but he was so dehydrated that, when he cried, there were no tears. But yet when I talked to the woman, I said, well, Naya, what are you thinking? What do you hope that, what are your hopes and dreams for this little boy? And she was quite clear about them. She said, I want him to, first of all, I want him to learn English, because I think that's an important thing for everyone. And then I want him to become a nurse so that he can go back and minister in our community, and so that the things that have happened to me and my family won't happen to other families. She had a very clear vision for her future, and that future involved this little boy surviving this horrible famine and growing up to go back and serve his own community.
In one of the early chapters in the book, you have called Through Filtered Eyes, and you talk about how your daughter would accuse you of mother blindness. You see the best in all the smallest accomplishments of children or grandchildren. Talk a little bit about how we can see, maybe with the filtered eyes, as God sees the world around us.
The essay that you mentioned, we were visiting a family of Dalits, members of the lowest caste in Indian society, and I had the opportunity of sitting with a number of women, and they were making little matchboxes, and they were showing me how, and we were having a good time laughing about how inept I was at this. But yet one of the mothers stopped and through the translator asked me, she says, "Why are you here? What is it that you see when you look at us?" And of course, to Rich and I, they looked like anybody else that we had met on the trip through India. You know, they were hardworking, they cared about their children, and yet in the culture that they lived in, they were untouchables. They were the lowest of the low. Their husbands could only work in certain jobs. They could only live in certain places, and certainly nobody came to visit them. So this woman was puzzled. "Why are you here? What is it you see when you look at us?" And it gave me the thought of what is it that God sees when he looks at us? And the truth is that when God looks at us, those of us who have a relationship with Jesus Christ, when he sees us, he doesn't see our warts and blemishes and bruises. He sees, through the blood of Jesus Christ, he sees his son, valuable beyond measure. You know, what are we worth? We're worth more than birds. We're worth more than sheep. We're worth more than the lilies of the field. First Corinthians tells us that we are bought with a price, and that price is the life of God's son, Jesus. And as remarkable as that is, a lot of the people that we meet don't yet know that.
And Rich, I'm sure that, you know, Renee talks in that chapter about, you know, understanding, seeing through Father's eyes as well. That, I mean, that's been maybe one of your challenges as the president of the organization, is to help us. It's called World Vision, but what we really need, God's vision, don't we, for the world?
Well, we really do. And one of the frustrations that we have at World Vision all the time is trying to get, in this case, American people, American Christians, to see the world the way God sees it. In my book, The Hole in Our Gospel, I raise the question of, you know, do we think God actually looks at the children of the world and has and doles out his compassion based on where they live, their zip code, or does he love all the children in the world, whether they're Ethiopian or Indian or Chinese or American? And how do we then love the world's children the way God would want us to love them? And, you know, even in our work with the poor, you know, it is so easy for us as Americans to go to a place where there's poverty and to feel pity and to look at all of the things that these people lack. You know, they're lacking clean water. They're lacking enough food to eat. They're lacking medical services. But actually, I'd like to turn that on its head, because if you believe that these people and their community were created in the image of God, then what we know about them is they have all the same gifts and abilities and creativity and entrepreneurship that we would find in any community in our country. The only difference is they've had circumstances that have not allowed their full God-given potential to come out. But we know they're hardworking. We know they're survivors. They've survived in conditions that you and I couldn't live in for a week. So they're clever. They're survival-oriented. They're resourceful. And what World Vision tries to do is bring out those God-given gifts in the community so that they can flourish. And that's why I say we often have a lot we can learn from the poor, because they're incredibly resourceful people. And what we try to do is liberate that God-given creativity and ability that we find in every human being around the world. But in terms of how we look at the world, it's very important for Americans not to live in our little bubble, you know, and to realize that there are 2 billion people that live on less than $2 a day in the world. There are almost 1 billion that have no clean water to drink and have never taken a shower in their life. So we have to be aware of that, and as we are aware of it, just like in the story of the Good Samaritan, we are morally responsible for doing something to help our neighbors. And when Jesus asked that question, who is our neighbor, the answer was not the person next door. It was any person in need where we have the ability to make a difference and to give them a helping hand. And so that gives us 7 billion neighbors around the world that I think the Lord wants this nation of Christians, the wealthiest nation in the history of Christendom, to use our abundant resources, both financial and educational and spiritual, to reach out into the world with God's eyes, you know, seeing the world through his eyes.
Talking today with Rich and Renee Stearns. Rich is, of course, president of World Vision at U.S., and Rich and Renee have traveled millions of miles and collected some amazing stories, and they've put them together in a wonderful book called He Walks Among Us, a devotional, life-changing book, and we're going to talk more in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Rich and Renee Stearns joining us today. They've co-authored a book that just came out here a couple months ago called He Walks Among Us, Encounters with Christ in a Broken World. Rich is president of World Vision U.S., and Renee and Rich have five children and at least one grandchild. Is that right?
Well, you're getting behind, Neil. We have two grandchildren as of a few weeks ago, and we have a third one on the way, so they're starting to multiply.
We at some point here in their interview, if it was TV, we'd be swapping pictures. But anyway, they have, of course, really met millions of children around the world, and many of these children's stories are recounted in this wonderful book called He Walks Among Us. Rich, I know, and Renee, we live in a country that, you know, we experience some difficulties, but it's not at the level you kind of referred to a few minutes ago, that, you know, we couldn't live for a week in some of the circumstances they live. Is there something that we can learn maybe about the molding, the clay pot, and God shaping and molding the character in our life? I mean, we don't really understand that so much.
Well, you know, I think one thing we do kind of understand in our Christian faith here in the United States is that God often uses hardship and suffering in our lives to do his business with us. Maybe it's we've lost a job, or we faced a health crisis, or we've lost a loved one, or we're struggling in a relationship. It's in the hard times when God really works with us and shapes our character and works on spiritual issues in our heart. I know it's been that way in my life. You know, I can think of times when I didn't have a job and I was unemployed and God was doing some work with me. I can think of times when Renee had a health issue that we were dealing with together, and how it really draws you closer to God, because all of a sudden you realize how much you do depend on God. But one of my kind of life verses comes from Jeremiah chapter 18, I think it is, where it talks about Jeremiah going down to the potter's house. And more than once in Scripture, there's the metaphor of the potter at the wheel shaping the clay into different shapes. And then, of course, we know about pottery and clay. When I was the CEO of Lennox, I was America's largest potter. And we had big factories that would shape clay into beautiful objects, and then they would go into the hot fire of the kiln to be fired, and all the impurities would be burned out. And this was a repeated process. They'd be shaped and then put into the fire, and then decorated and put into the fire again. And I think that's a wonderful metaphor of how God works with all of us, that we are clay in his hands, and he wants to shape us. Jeremiah 18 says he was shaping the pot into a shape that was more pleasing to him. And I love that metaphor of God shaping us. But the clay has to be willing to be shaped, and I think that's the lesson for us. So these hardships in life allow God to work with us and shape us and build our character, and they're not always pleasant. It's not always pleasant to go into the fire. But that's how he shapes us, and that's why we have so much we can learn from the poorest of the poor. They spend a lot of their lives in that fire, in that kiln, being shaped and struggling and drawing closer to God. And sometimes when Renee and I meet with these people, we feel like we're meeting people that are very, very close to the Lord. And, you know, Jesus kind of said that, you know, he used to hang out with the poor. And I think when we spend time with the poor, we are actually going to the place where we're likely to encounter Christ. And that's why we put that in the title of our book, Encounters with Christ in a Broken World.
I think one of the things we also need to think about as parents and as grandparents is that this shaping process that God wants to do in our lives, we can open the door for our kids to see that as well. We have responsibilities to our children and our grandchildren to help them to catch a bigger vision of what God is doing around the world. And so we certainly have had opportunities now and again to invite one of our children to travel with us. But even when we children don't see firsthand the kinds of work that God is doing around the world, I think it's important for us to help open their eyes. You know, I often say, and Rich has heard me say this a lot, that we sometimes live in a very small world. You know, I know my world is sometimes limited to the space between my house and the grocery store and maybe the mall and my church, but it's a big world out there, and we need to help introduce our children to that world by sharing with them what we know about what God is doing around the world. We have written a companion book to He Walks Among Us called God's Love for You, which is really a Bible storybook that has accompanying it stories of children who live around the world. And so, you know, as our kids were little, we would tell them about children in places in Africa that, you know, they might not ever have an opportunity to visit, but where God is at work nonetheless, and share with them the things that God is doing in the lives of boys and girls like them so that they can also feel like they're part of what God is doing. So whether that's by reading missionary biographies or being involved in local activities through your, you know, cultural centers or through your church, getting to know people from cultures very different than our own is helpful to start early with our children. You know, the truth is that most of us live in community, very diverse communities, and God is beginning to bring the world to our doorstep, and we as parents and grandparents have the opportunity and I think the obligation to help our children get to know them.
Yeah, the world has come to us, and the opportunities abound around us. Rich, I want to go back, and maybe Renee, you can comment as well, but you talked about, you know, that shaping process from Jeremiah 18, that there's a lot that we can learn from the poor. And maybe just even reflecting on some of the other stories in the book, what are some lessons, some things that maybe have been more clear to you over the years as, you know, all the miles you've traveled, and some lessons learned?
Well, you know, there are so many. One story that I often tell, and again, as we travel and we come into the, you know, somebody's mud hut or thatched roof house, and we sit with them and we break bread and we get to know them and we get to hear their story, we do really glean, you know, deeper insights about our own faith and that we take back with us. And one of the reasons we wrote this book is we feel that the people we've met have entrusted their stories to us, and believing that maybe we'd go back and tell others and share what they've shared with us. But one of the earliest experiences I had with World Vision, Renee and I went to Peru not long after we got here. And I want to paint a picture of how remote this place was. It was in Peru. It was in the Andes Mountains, 14,000 feet up. That's about the tip of Pikes Peak. That's how high it was. So, you know, altitude sickness and the whole nine yards. And in the rugged Andes Mountains. So we were about 6,000 miles from our home in Seattle and way up in the mountains in a pretty unforgiving climate. As you can imagine, the weather changes very rapidly at that altitude, and it's a harsh life. And yet here were communities of people living in the mountains, raising livestock, farming. And we went into the home of a woman named Octaviana. And Octaviana had just lost her husband about 9 months earlier. So here she was, a single mother with three children and no husband to help her face the climate, the farming, the raising of the animals, the caring for the children. And she was just a desperately, you know, sad woman who was facing, you know, insurmountable odds. And I mean, the happy part of it is World Vision was moving into that community and she was beginning to get some help from us. But I asked her, as we heard her story and she was just in tears in her little house there, I asked her what she prayed for. And she said, "I pray to God every day that He would see us and not forget us on this mountain, and that He would send help, that He would send help." So she's crying out to the Lord for help, and that is her daily prayer. And the realization came over me that as this woman has been praying that help would come, here was the president of World Vision and his wife and some of my staff who had come to her home 6,000 miles away from Seattle, 14,000 feet up in the mountains, and we were there to help. And I thought, that is the most incredible answer to prayer I have ever heard in my life. And then it dawned on me that that's exactly how God works in the world. Right now, today, as your listeners are listening to this interview, there are children and widows and orphans and people in need all over the world crying out to God in their time of need. It could be your next-door neighbor who's just discovered they have cancer. It could be the elderly person down the street who is lonely, or it could be an orphan in Zambia who is without hope and without help, and they're praying to God that he would help them. And the great revelation is that you and I might be the answer to someone's prayer. And if you think of millions of prayers around the world being offered up to God, and millions of us Christians around the world prepared to be the answer to someone's prayer, it's a pretty neat picture of how God uses his church and his followers to go into the world almost as a healing balm or salve on the hurts of the world. I mean, we're sent into the world to be healers and comforters and people of love who are going out to help our neighbors and to love our neighbors as ourselves. So that's one of the profound lessons I learned just on one of those trips.
Talking today with Rich and Renee Stearns, talking about their wonderful work called He Walks Among Us. And it's an opportunity for us as they tell the stories, encounters with Christ in a broken world. And they've also done another version of it, God's Love for You, with the more children's stories. And there's we can really, as an entire family, see how we can see the world as God sees the world. We'll talk more on Connecting Faith with Rich and Renee Stearns in just a moment.
Are you struggling to keep up with your fitness plans for the new year? We want to help. Join us for Commit to Live Fit 40-Day Challenge as Susie Larson leads you down a six-week journey of faith and fitness. During these next few weeks, we'll focus on physical and spiritual steps to a healthier life as you commit to live fit. Sign up for free at myfaithradio.com. We start this week. It's not too late to sign up for Commit to Live Fit 40-Day Challenge.
When you listen to and support Faith Radio, your life can be changed day by day. You're hearing the preaching of God's Word through many outstanding teachers. You get an opportunity to learn and apply the principles of what it means to live intentionally, frankly, in your walk with Christ, in your family, and in your daily walk. You know, growing in faith doesn't just happen without setting godly goals and taking daily intentional steps, and Faith Radio is here to help you. Can I ask you to support this great station today? Give online at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.
We've been talking today with Rich and Renee Stearns. Rich Stearns is the president of World Vision, U.S., and he and Renee have traveled millions of miles, and out of that encounters, as the subtitle of their books is, Encounters with Christ in the Broken World, really seeing the evidence of Jesus in the lives of children and adults around the globe. He Walks Among Us is the title of the book. And Renee, I want to just ask you, because you quote Lynn Hybels suggesting that rather than being overwhelmed by the world's problems, we should ask, what's mine to do? I think there are many people probably, you know, that listen, whether, you know, they think, well, I don't really, you know, I'm struggling or whatever the situation, but I, you know, what can I really do? Talk a little bit about that response.
Lynn was very powerful in my own thinking about this. We had been in Palestine and seeing some of the challenges that the Palestinian Christians were facing in their communities. And I was ready to go home and say, you know, this is not mine to fix. You know, I don't have any expertise. I can't understand the situation. It's much too complex for me. And she challenged me. She says, that's the wrong thing to say. She says, you need to ask yourself the question, what's mine to do? And I think that's the question we all have to ask. You know, the circumstances in which people live around the world are, Rich often says that poverty is rocket science. It's not, there's no quick fixes. There are no band-aids that we can put on that will help, you know, a woman who is living in abject poverty somewhere in the world to all of a sudden live life in all its fullness. But the question is, what part can I play? What role, what's my responsibility? And while some people diminish its importance, I think first and foremost, we can pray. God has given us this amazing invitation to come to Him with the concerns of the world. And so to be able to pray for the people around the world as you pray for yourself and your family, you know, as you take a drink of clean water, pray for those people that Rich talked about earlier who never in their whole life will be able to drink a glass of water without, you know, life-threatening bacteria. Pray for those people for whom three meals a day is an unheard of luxury. Pray for the people around the world who God loves and has called us to care about. And in the same way as we're to pray, we're also to be involved in whatever way we can through ministries in our churches, through the support of missionaries. I often say one of the very best things we've done with our children is to buy a map. Find out where these remote places are around the world. When you talk about a family living in Mongolia, be able to put your finger on the map and figure out where that is. Or if it's Ethiopia or Mozambique, learn about where people live and the kind of circumstances they live in. Because when we know more about them, we're more inclined to look at ourselves as brothers and sisters. And then once we know about them, then we can figure out what it is God has called us to do. As I've said, a lot of people from around the world have come to our own communities, and that's a wonderful way to get to know about the customs and cultures of people living in faraway places. And then to be involved in the work of organizations like World Vision. Certainly people can sponsor a child, provide for their necessities and provide for their communities. And I should let Rich talk about that. But there are lots of really simple things that we can do. It's easy to be overwhelmed with the problems of the world, but we need to find that one thing that we can do and do it with real commitment.
Well, and before Rich jumps in, I just know there was a report out not too long ago. I think Christianity Today had a study, and this, you know, one of the most effective things to do is to be a child sponsor. I know there are many listeners right now that have done just that and are wondering, is it really making a difference?
Well, yeah, let me jump in here. We think that in many ways, child sponsorship is kind of a brilliant idea that our founder had about 60 years ago when it was first introduced by World Vision. And it was just a simple idea that said, I can't fix the world, but I can help one child. I can't deal with this global poverty, global issues that are so big and overwhelming, but I can help one child. And over the years, World Vision has refined that child sponsorship model to become more and more effective. And essentially the way it works today, and we have over 4 million sponsored children around the world, but the way it works for us is that child that you might sponsor, and by the way, it's just about a dollar a day. So most of us could squeeze a dollar a day into our budgets to sponsor a child. And when you see the incredible difference it can make in that child's life, it's one of the best investments you'll ever make. But imagine if our children only cost us a dollar a day to raise. What we do is we go to work in that child's community, and we understand that children don't live by themselves. They are placed in families, and families are placed in communities. And if the community has no clean water to drink, then the children don't have clean water to drink. If the community does not have enough food to feed everyone, then the children don't have enough food to eat. So you can't deal with children one at a time. You have to really work within their community context. And so we'll stay there typically about 15 years in the community. We'll work on clean water and sanitation and hygiene. We'll work on community health issues like safe childbirth and malaria prevention and basic first aid and helping moms understand how diseases spread and helping them understand the importance of nutrition. We'll work with the farmers to help them with better farming methods and access to markets, maybe introduce new crops to the region that provide micronutrients that the children and the families are missing. We work on economic development and microloans so that we can help them create little businesses, raising chickens or pigs, or maybe opening up a little retail store where they sell you know, we might call it a 7-Eleven or something, but they sell sundries and they sell just basic things that people need, cough syrup, diapers, things of that nature. We work on education to make sure all of the kids are in school. And so over 15 years, as we work in these communities, we create a rising tide that lifts all the children. So not just your sponsored child, but all of the other children in the community are benefiting from this work. And of course, as a Christian organization, the other thing we're doing is we're trying to be the light of Christ in the community. If it's a Christian community, we work very closely with the local churches, and we want to leave the church stronger when we leave than it was when we arrived. If it's a community that's non-Christian, we try to be a witness to Christ, and we work on community values, and we try to introduce people to, you know, what we would call positive Christian values that can help their community. But sponsorship is a wonderful way. For about $1 a day, you can sponsor a boy or a girl in roughly 60 countries around the world where we offer it, and it's easy to do on the World Vision website, just worldvision.org. But one last thing, Neil, some of the things we do are so incredibly cheap. You might be thinking, boy, I can't imagine somebody that has no clean water. They don't have water to drink, they don't have water to wash with, and they're drinking water out of a mud hole somewhere, and they're hauling the water with buckets back to their home. The cost to bring clean water to a person for life is about $50. Now, that's about 14 cents a day for a year. So you think, well, how could I possibly help somebody that doesn't have clean water? Well, if you've got 14 cents a day for 1 year, we can bring clean water to a person for life. So some of these things are incredibly inexpensive to do. It just takes the knowledge and expertise to do them. And, of course, it takes the resources and money to do them as well, but they can be done.
Amazing work being done through World Vision and 4 million children sponsored, and God doing some powerful things in changing lives and communities. And we've been talking about some of those stories, and Renee, I was just wondering, maybe our time is getting by, but Renee and Rich, maybe even both of you. I know that it's sort of like children, you all, you know, you can't pick a favorite, but if you think about maybe a favorite story in the book, He Walks Among Us, is there one that sort of comes to mind you just has so impacted you?
I think for me, that's the story of a little girl named Nagavini in Ethiopia. Although I must admit, my favorite is often the last person I've seen on my travels. But this little girl really sticks out to me. We met her and her grandmother at their home. She had been abducted on her way to school and had been stolen to be a bride for a man in the community who could not afford the bride price. He kidnapped her. He took her shoes so she couldn't run away, and he chained her in a little hovel far from her home. And the grandmother was obviously quite distraught about this, and she went to the police asking them to help. And their response was, you know, this is just the way things are in our community. You're better off to leave well enough alone. But she, as grandmothers are wont to be, was very concerned about her granddaughter and insisted that somebody help. And so she went to the man, the World Vision employee in the community, and asked if he would help. Now, of course, his job wasn't to rescue kidnapped children. His job was to help provide the kinds of resources that Rich has been talking about that World Vision does when it works in the community. But this young man, Asatu, went to the police and tried to persuade them to help this grandmother and the kidnapped daughter, a granddaughter. And again, the police pushed back and said, no, we really can't. But he was very persistent, and he continued to appeal on her behalf. And finally, the police just sort of said, all right, we give up, we'll go and find her. And they did find her and brought her back to her grandmother. And the thing that makes the story stand out for me is what the grandmother said. I said, well, what did this young man's name, Asatu? I said, what did Asatu's work mean to you? And she said, you know, it would have been enough if he had just come alongside of me to be my friend, but he did so much more. And I have to say, in that instant, my mind went back to another desert community and to another child. But this one is laying in a manger. And I thought, you know, people will say it would be enough if Jesus would come alongside and just be our friend and be a good teacher and a good moral example. But that wouldn't be enough at all. Because more than a teacher, more than a friend, more than a companion to live our life with, what we really needed was a Savior. And I thought this young man, Asatu, in what he did in this community in Ethiopia, was being the hands and feet of Jesus to these people. And I thought that's what God calls us to do wherever we are, whether we're in Ethiopia or other remote parts of the world or even in our own communities. There may be someone who will never darken the door of a church, who will never open the scriptures, but for them, we can be the hands and feet of Jesus. We can be the fragrance, the sweet fragrance that he offers. We can be Christ's ambassadors as if he were making his appeal through us. And so just that image of this young man in Ethiopia who helped to rescue this little girl stands out probably more than any other story that I've encountered in my travels.
Rich, our time is gone. I want to just, and Renee, I want to thank you again for sharing these wonderful stories. And we should acknowledge your photographer as well, who really did a wonderful job. And of course, you've got the God's Love for You Bible Storybook as well for the whole family. And pray that it would be a resource that would have impact, a lasting impact for years to come. We thank you guys for the leadership you're providing for the challenge for us today.
Well, thank you, Neil. It was great to be on your program. And just one last word about the devotional, He Walks Among Us. These are not all gloomy, sad devotionals. They're many of them are uplifting and really hopeful. And I think your listeners would find it to be an uplifting journey of faith to walk through that book and meet some of the people that we've met.
We invite you to find out more about the wonderful work of World Vision on the website, worldvision.org. Rich Stearns, president of World Vision U.S., and Rich and Renee joining us today. The book is called He Walks Among Us. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Before we wrap up today's program, just a quick reminder that tomorrow will be a prayer day for us here on Faith Radio, and we'll be talking with Daniel Henderson about transforming prayer during Connecting Faith. Hope that you can join us then. And a reminder, you can always go to PrayerWorks anytime on our website by going to myfaithradio.com/prayerworks. Leave a prayer request, pray for others, be a part of the body of Christ praying for one another on PrayerWorks at myfaithradio.com.